Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million. You didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamashi. It's Jay-Z on the board. S&P futures down 28. Dow futures down 242. Just when you thought this was over. Which I actually kind of thought it was. I thought this was over for a few weeks at least until our man went to Japan, but obviously it is not. NASDAQ futures down at 99.50. Trade war persisting, they say. So we're down another chunk. Maybe it's not the trade war. Maybe it's other stuff. Who knows? Hey, Lou, how are you?
Good morning, sir.
I have, I know you always have stuff you want to talk about, but I have an issue with you. Not an issue with you personally, an issue that I think you can maybe help a little bit with, because I'm back in my John Wayne movie where all kinds of crazy stuff is happening in this country as the people continue to fan the diversion that the left and the right is going through fighting with each other. There's really, really weird bleep going on here in terms of what's changing in the regulatory world. And people can say what they want about the Republicans changing the regulation back the other way, but the real insidious stuff continues on dramatically. And what I'm speaking about is, as everybody knows, I own a brokerage firm. I'm a money manager and enjoy my work. Have a lot of great clients. But I see stuff in the industry, Lou, that if you put a headline in a Wall Street Journal, you would never, do you realize that it's almost impossible now for you to sell a, get in the system and sell a small stock certificate?
I didn't realize that. And when you say get in the system and sell a small stock certificate, what are you talking about?
I'm saying if for instance, Lou Michaels went someplace, a startup firm of some kind, and or even a firm that's already trading a little bit, maybe on the pink sheets or someplace, they're already public, and you do some consulting work for them or whatever, and you say, look, how about paying me, a third cash and two-thirds stock? And they say, fine. And they issue a certificate for 2,000 shares or something. And maybe you have a brokerage account somewhere, maybe you don't, maybe you just put it in a safe. If you had a brokerage account for a real long time someplace and have a lot of money, maybe they will put it in the system for you, in which case they'll take the certificate, they'll send it to wherever you send it, to DTC or whatever, and now it's in the system. Now it's electronically listed someplace, and it's on your sheets. Say, for instance, you want to transfer it to PTI or some other place. Good luck. Because we have a couple people we're trying to bring in, and I thought it was kind of our problem. It's not. Nobody will take that unless you come in with original confirms that you bought the stock. You have to prove to them that it's not money laundering. Why would anybody think it would be? It's almost like if you walked into some place and you pull up a dollar bill and the bartender said, you have to tell me where you got that before I can sell you a beer.
None of this surprises me.
What shocks me. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that jumped out, and I want to talk about a couple of things this morning, but one of the things that jumped out at me during the war on drugs in the 1980s, and I remember telling this to a federal judge who at a wedding who looked at me and said, you may be onto something here, young man, back then. I said that the biggest issue that I have with the war of drugs is what it is doing to civil liberties. In other words, the criminal law and criminal code changes in order to deal with widespread drug use and money laundering and all the stuff that was going on with the narco world back in the 1980s was eroding civil liberties. It was eroding search and the right to privacy. It was eroding your procedural protections against governmental search and seizure, warrantless surveillance. All of this stuff was being eaten away in the name of law enforcement on a problem that we consider to be almost existential at the time, especially in certain cities like Miami and New Orleans and Phoenix and Los Angeles. And so the global war on terror, when it kicked off in 2001, that Patriot Act, which again you and I have talked about, was mainly a do something reaction by the federal government. But the Patriot Act opened the door to all kinds of abuses, and you saw the end result of one of them with this Robert Kraft situation in Florida, where you had a clearly illegal warrant that people just ran with, and the supposition that you can get away with this kind of stuff, they're called sneak peek warrants, but the idea that you can get away with this kind of thing on the part of law enforcement, and there's no check. So it doesn't surprise me a bit that you're seeing this kind of regulatory intrusion into even the smallest aspects of concern. The irony, of course, is I'd love to know how much this defeats money laundering, international arms
funding
for terrorists or narco-terrorists. I'd love to know how effective it is. I'm not sure we have a measure.
But why,
reminds me a little bit of the gun control issues, where you say, okay, we're gonna enact gun laws, and you say, yeah, well, that's great. That'll prevent law-abiding citizens from engaging in constitutionally protected activity, but it's not going to stop the bad guys.
I don't disagree with that. What I'm saying is, there's two questions I have for you, and the reason why I ask these questions is because you're supposed to have all the answers. Two questions I have. If we're going to do this, whoever they are, when are we going to tell people? Ever? Does the first time Lou Michaels finds out that his stock that he thought was his is essentially worthless because he can't sell it, is the day he tries to sell it, or at least when somebody gives it to him, he'll know at the time, no, you better give me the cash because these aren't worth anything.
Well, you know how this goes. The most effective way to deal with this kind of overreach by lawmakers or by the feds, and I'm pretty sure, Chief, that this is something that is not on any lawmaker's radar. I'm guessing this is some federal regulatory agency that has stepped up, the SEC or whomever has stepped up and said, yeah, we need to do this, and we're working with the FBI, and we're teeing all this stuff up, and so we adjusted these regulations. I mean, the only way, the way this is going to get flagged is by people like you who are directly affected saying, look, this is effectively invalidating wealth. No. This is damaging the creation of wealth and the creation of long-term prosperity because of the way it's affected the markets on these securities. And unless
it doesn't affect the market, you just can't use it.
Yeah.
Two things. You would think if there's any rationale here whatsoever, there had to have been 20 money laundering cases someplace where guys use penny stocks as a money laundering tool, okay? And I can't imagine that, but that doesn't mean crooks aren't smarter than me about being crooks. Obviously, that's why they're good crooks, and I would never be a crook.
My guess is that this may have been much like RICO, the Racketeer Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act. This may have been much like RICO, a statute that was targeted or a regulation that was targeted at a very specific type of activity, but has then, because of the way it was drafted, has then been used by law enforcement or by federal enforcement entities to just dragnet in whomever they can find that falls under its aegis. That's the Robert Kraft situation with the sneak peek warrant, which was originally designed as part of the Patriot Act. I'm pretty sure Mr. Kraft doesn't fall under the rubric of under the coverage
right.
of the original scope of the Patriot Act. I don't think he's a terrorist.
No, but here's how these things roll. I mean, the incredible obtrusiveness of the regulators in our industry, and I got to believe we're not the only one. The weird part is, Lou, if I called around yesterday, I said, you know, we've been having some trouble getting people bringing these stocks in. Are we the only ones? And I have a lot of friends in the industry. Every single person, Lou, said, oh, no, everybody knows that the regulators are all over that issue this year, and we all have been forewarned not to do any of this stuff. Nobody can point, there's no rule, there's no anything that says that, by the way, 90% of all people that own paper stocks, even if they've had them in the system for 20 years, now decide to sell them or move them, that all these people are criminals. It's not, there's no law you can point to. And the weird part was, you know, when we get audited at PTI every couple of years, like everybody else, fortunately, we always do pretty well. But the weird part is, Lou, every year your consulting people will say, this is what they're looking at this year. Guess what it was last year? Again, no law
imagine.
Outside activities. So
what does that mean?
It means that if somebody is working for PTI and they work, for instance, on a Saturday night, they bartend, and I don't have all the paperwork and procedures to approve that, I get written up and fined, and so do they, because we don't know that you're bartending. What the hell difference does it make?
That's kind of terrifying. I mean, you've heard me on the show talk about what I consider to be unreasonable employer intrusiveness into private lives of employees. And by the way, there's a whole ton of statutes out there in various states that say you, as an employer, you can't take action against somebody because of their legitimate outside business or outside work activities. So that's an interesting case. So what?
It's not a case, Lou. This permeated the industry last year. Last year, that was the biggest theme at all audits. So what happens is that you have consulting.
So let me give you the employment lawyer perspective on that. So you're in a regulatory scheme that requires you to know about the outside business activities or outside activities of your employees. You don't know, for example, that some guy is moonlighting as an auto mechanic somewhere. You ultimately terminate the employee. You go through, you do your due diligence as required under these federal regulations, and you query all your staff. Are any of you guys holding second jobs? And this guy sticks his hand up and says, well, I am. I'm an auto mechanic. Okay, fine. So a month later, you fire the guy for some conduct that he does, or in fact, you just don't like him. He's an at-will employee. You fire him. He then turns around and sues you under, say, New York state law or Illinois state law or California state law or Massachusetts state law, where he says, listen, I had to reveal that I was an auto mechanic, and the minute the company found out that I was an auto mechanic, or they had this knowledge that I was an auto mechanic, I was fired, and I'm being fired for my outside business activities. Now, you know that that wasn't the reason for the firing, but a reasonably competent plaintiff's counsel can sure make it look that way.
Well,
can make it look like a violation. And your defense that, hey, I had to ask this question because of my regulatory requirements is not going to save you in that situation. If a jury believes, oh, yeah, well, once they found out this guy was an auto mechanic, they said that's inconsistent with the image we want to portray to our clients.
Well, look, see, here's what's happening. And then I'll get off this subject, but the only person I can talk to about it is you. It's going more than just you knowing. They are moving towards that whoever is in your procedures, and it's very undefined. It's turned into monitoring.
Yeah.
Where they actually expect, like Audrey is an agent of PTI, has had her Series 7 and everything forever. She's also in real estate. Obviously, everybody knows she comes on here. They want me to monitor her. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah. So now it's even worse.
Yeah, it's worse. It's way worse
from an employment perspective, from an employment lawyer's perspective, because now you're put in a position where you have to intrude, and you know so this would be a really interesting lawsuit because you know, one of the things we tell our clients is you don't want anything to do with what your employees are doing off duty unless, you know, maybe it's illegal. And if it's illegal, even then you want law enforcement to tell you that it's illegal. You don't want to be out there making these kinds of judgments absent some kind of you know, formal proof like videotaped evidence or videoed evidence. What an interesting
but this is where they're take for instance this show. Okay, you're never going to find somebody who is registered like I am on a show. Okay, I mean you are on CNBC because they just push the company stuff. But what I'm doing, you're not going to see anybody doing it. And but I happen to know since I was at the SIBO when the regs were written, I know the rules. Okay, I know you don't give investment advice on TV or on radio. I never would anyway. Is everybody knows if somebody says, what do you think of my IBM? I don't know you.
Just for the record, when I give investment advice, when you've invited me to give investment advice, I assume that red flags go up in front of the listener's eyes,
yeah.
You know, imagination saying, this guy's a moron.
No, no.
Don't listen to anything he says.
Well, what I'm saying is, so what I do, it's non-scripted, there's no notes. There's a reason why I show up with no notes. Okay. And no agenda other than reading the news before the show. And obviously, I've read the news the night before. Everything that I know I have to do to be on the show, I do. The last time we had an audit, the auditors listened to the show all week.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
And are these federal auditors?
Yeah, we're FINRA people.
Okay.
So get all this. We have a big meeting, and they say, guess what? We find nothing wrong with what you're doing. You're following all the rules exactly. But still, you need to be supervised. Why? Well, we can't, there's no way we can say that you don't need to be supervised in this outside activity. First of all, you just said it was an outside activity. Why do I need to be supervised?
Okay, well, let's start
yeah.
with basic 101 stuff. The minute you have a federal regulatory agency or any state regulatory agency saying, yeah, we're going to start monitoring the content of your speech, you've got a First Amendment problem, big time. And so that's fascinating that they would say that. I think my response would be, you know, unless you guys have got something specific you can point to, you can just shut up right now.
You know, well, no, they could stay here. They could find you. Everybody is terrified of these people.
I believe it. Of course they are, because that's the unregulated power of the state. This is the same thing you used to see in the old Soviet Union, and you see in Russia now. To use a noteworthy and inflammatory example, because you are at the mercy of a bureaucrat, and I mean you can reach back. I was a Russian studies major when I was an undergrad. I mean this jumps right into the forefront from, you know, 19th century Russian literature on, the incredible burden that a bureaucracy and the incredible abusive discretion that you're subject to with unelected bureaucrats who are not accountable to anybody.
That's
astounding.
This is, I'll give one more and we'll talk about more interesting stuff, but what's even more...
Michael Avenatti.
Well, just be one second. When you open up an account at a bank... or Jay-Z does, or anybody listeners and you decide, well, I'm the oldest, and you want to write checks to people and do whatever you want to do, do you expect somebody to be watching you?
Or watching me as I do it? No.
What do you mean? Because now we used to offer checking accounts here from your trading account. A lot of firms do, and we were doing it, and all of a sudden 2 years ago our consulting people that we hire to make sure we're up on all this stuff, because you no way you can do it all yourself now. So we have a firm that helps us out with this, good guys. And we come to the annual meeting and they say, do you have any people left with checking accounts? And I say, yeah, you know, we got 20, 25. Well, you probably ought to get rid of them. Well, why? Because they expect, now you are expected to monitor that account. What exactly do you mean by monitor? Well, that's the problem. Nobody seems to know what monitor means. I said, well, I can't stop a check before it goes out. So if I see one written to, ISIS, I can't stop the damn thing. Well, no, you can't, but you're supposed to monitor it. What does that mean? What if somebody sends one to some place that seems a little odd? Is it my job to research it and figure out where it went and turn the guy in? Well, we're not exactly sure it's supposed to go that far, but right now the word is monitor, and that's a very dangerous word. What exactly does that? What does that mean? So we get rid of all our checking accounts. What? Why? The bank doesn't have to. Why should we?
It's fascinating because that sounds like the Stasi. You know, it sounds like the East German secret police or the KGB basically coming to you and saying, we need you to rat out your employees or rat out your neighbors or rat out your business associates. And if you don't, we're gonna throw you in the gulag.
Well, that's right. It's all about you. And there has to be a procedure. Now, for those of you out there, I'm not trying to scare anybody. I'm not trying to drum up business. Although, business is always good. But, I mean, if you have a checking account at Schwab, at Fidelity, those places, which you are perfectly willing to, you know, perfectly legally for you to have, just be advised that somebody's job at Schwab and Fidelity is to monitor what you're doing with it.
That's Orwellian, I guess, is the word I would look for.
But every year, every year is another issue, and it's relentless. How do you go?
Here we go back to a theme that you and I have touched on. When you have this kind of incredible intrusiveness on the part of federal or state regulators, any state regulators, you are now completely subject to the discretion of those regulators. If they decide that you are a bad guy or you irritated them or something else, they simply open up their books, they find whatever, and then they force you to open yours, and then they find whatever violations they want.
Right.
It's a very, very dangerous situation. It's Chicago.
Well, it's reached the point where it's reached the point where, you know, God, I hope one of them's not listening today. it's almost you can see the next step, Lou, and it's terrifying. I mean, maybe when you get to my age, you get to see the next step. When I was in the business on the floor, the interesting part was there was a rule that said you had to tape all your phone lines if you're going to take calls from customers.
Right.
Of course, everybody did that except Goldman and Morgan and those guys because they knew they were too big to spank. They never taped theirs because they never wanted you to go back on an order that front ran, you know, was a front running order. They never wanted you to be able to take the order or who called who. So they never taped theirs. This is a little known favorite, but since the floor's essentially been closed for years, I guess I can talk about it. They never had tapes on theirs. So then you go to this, people foolishly start using emails instead of picking up the phone and call their client. Okay. Well, now you're supposed to have the client call on tape. Well, you don't have to be, okay, but they recommend it. But now you have to save every email no matter what. God help you. And not only that, we can't use a regular email server. We got to use a server that is approved by FINRA. You think there's a deal there? Duh.
Yeah.
Then now, of course,
Whether there is or not, there's a potential there.
Yeah. Now I'll never, I mean, the only clients I'll ever text are like you, you know, because you were a friend before, you know. But I mean, you know, are we gonna meet at Sirius? That kind of a text. You don't have
So what happens? What happens if you decide that you're going to use something like, I don't know, one of Proton Mail or.
If I were to do that to a client
that wipes your stuff automatically.
You can't do that. You can't. You cannot contribute. If I started to contribute or use text for you. That's why I don't Twitter. If I were to do Twitter, it's not illegal for me to do Twitter, but somehow PTI would have to hire somebody to monitor all my tweets. Because everything I say to the world is considered communication to a customer, even if you're not a customer.
Fascinating.
But my question is, how long before it's going to be in my lifetime where everybody knows that you and I can go out for a beer or I can talk to you on the phone? I'm going to say that every time in 20 years, that will not be legal because they can't monitor it.
Interesting. I mean, there's something to them.
I mean, I've gotten to the point, and we'll talk about your stuff after that I honestly believe, Lou, that it's not, well, you just talked earlier about the war on drugs. There is an undercurrent of people in this country, and I don't know who the hell they are. I don't know if they're Democrats or Republicans. I don't think they care which side they are. It's almost Thomas Jefferson. There's a group of people in this country that feel that people having rights should never be there. And the war on drugs is just another example of how you can rein them in. Thank God the plane went into the building because there was another opportunity to rein these crazy rights back in. Because these people have the 100-year, I knew when I got on the trading floor, the Goldman Sachs of the world, they never wanted a trading floor. They don't want regular people making that money. That money belonged to them. Then it took them 40 years, and there is no trading floor.
Here's what I'll tell you. I will tell you that I've said this before on the show. There is almost nothing more dangerous than a prosecutor armed with a badly written statute or regulation.
Lou, SP futures down 23.50. NASDAQ futures down 85. Dow's down over 200. Not a good morning. We'll be right back to tell you all about it. We're going on in Europe and Asia. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters, the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-401. 8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Home Base Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. She's Jay Z on the board. Jessica Zalewski, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, even though she hates that when you tell her that in the morning. S&P futures down 22.75. Been here since we wandered in. NASDAQ futures down 81.75. Dow futures down 230. Oil down 98 cents. Well, this is bizarre. We got oil going down because, even though we have problems in the Middle East, we've got gold going down, even though we have currency problems. This is very bizarre world. Did there used to be a comic strip, Lou? Bizarre world? DAX
yeah,
down 100.
Superman.
Yeah, DAX down 194, 1.6%. FTSE down 94, 1.3%. CAC around down 86, 1.6%. Headline here pretty much says it all. China says trade talks can't continue unless U.S. addresses its wrong action. Did not mention any action specifically. Couple of tense weeks of trade negotiation, and they're basically saying, screw you guys, much as we've been saying, screw them. Now they're screwing us back. It's just great. Nikkei down 132.6%. Shanghai down 39, 1.4%. Hang Seng down 438, 1.6%. I mentioned oil down 96 cents, barely holding over 60 bucks. 60.46, this you would not have guessed. Brent 60.91, that's down 118 as well. RBOB down to 197 from the 205 last week, so that's bizarre. Gold actually with a little bit of a dead cat bounce here, up $3, but still only 12.77. Silver up 3 cents, 14.48. Jay Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Is the rain cleaned up yet?
I think so.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, morning everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago weather today is partly cloudy, high of 75 and a low of 52. Phoenix is cloudy today with a high of 78 and low of 54. In baseball, the Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 5-2. The Cubs beat the Phillies 8-4. And the White Sox beat the Astros 9-4. In traffic, the I-90 West ramp is closed at 47th Street due to a jackknifed semi and another accident on the Tri-State going north before Ridgeland Avenue. There's some congestion causing delays up to 10 minutes. Nothing else. Back to you.
Lou, two real quick things. In the mind of the regulator, you and I sit on a park bench having a conversation. You and I may think that's a right. They think we're using that as a way to get around them watching us with other stuff. And look at the cash thing. If it went from being, if you withdrew or deposited over $10,000 cash in a bank, the bank had to fill out a form saying you did it, right? Not right or wrong, not that wasn't your right to do so. You could go in and withdraw 50 if you wanted, but it's something they're going to report. Okay? Which was never a crime on your part. It just was a reporting on their part, is the way I understand it. Now, if you go in 3 days in a row and withdraw $7,000, you can be essentially charged with getting around. This is what got Tenney Hassard. You're charged with getting around the reporting requirements that maybe you don't even know about. But they're going to accuse you of knowing that it's 10 and trying to duck under the number of 10 and do 9,000 2 days in a row or do 9,000 to 5,000. So you're going to trick the bank into not reporting. But guess what? They're already reporting it anyway. Every transfer anybody does, they have it in there, whether it's a check or... I mean, how does it go from one to the other, Lou, to why that's illegal for you?
That's the regulatory mindset.
But how do we all of a sudden reset that without, like, firing people, hitting them with water balloons? I mean, do they all have to be fired? Has there ever been a society who was able to pull back on this without essentially a revolution?
You're going to have to see something like the Frank Church Committee. Which I'm hoping is what's going to come out of the investigation of the Obama DOJ and national security apparatus.
But they're never going to get down to our level. They're never going to get down to helping you and me and our businesses.
Well, it's not going to come down to that. I doubt if it'll be that granular. But you're going to have to see that kind of an outcry.
But I mean, the incredible reporting requirements of every bank tracking you with every place you go to piece of paper, that's not granular. That's pretty serious in my mind. We have people going to jail for that.
That's right. But I mean, you're gonna have to see some kind of example made of somebody, and people are gonna stand up and say, okay, well, that could be me.
What about Elliot Spitzer?
Right now, in terms of changing something like that, is is the, life is complicated, and these are complicated issues. They're hard to report. They're hard to understand. And unless you've got somebody who really wants to take it, take it in their teeth and run with it, and publish what happens to ordinary citizens, and work a change that way, there's very little incentive for this kind of thing. Cheryl Atkinson's one of the few.
I'll give you an example. What's his name? The guy who went to the hookers had to across state lines. New York.
The guy. Mann Act?
No, who's the guy to take the governor of New York?
Elliot
Spitzer.
Not Cuomo.
Elliot Spitzer.
Spitzer.
There's a guy. He's got nothing but money, and he's taking cash out of his account, right? So nobody in the industry liked him because he was a traitor to his class, right? He actually said it.
No, he was a raving lunatic with way too much power, mad, and with the idea that he knew better than anybody else. He's a typical Democrat. He knew better than anybody else what was good for them.
Okay,
and if you disagreed with him, you were a target.
Okay, let me help you, Lou. In the area that I bask in or hide in or whatever I do, in the securities industry, the people he went after, New York Stock Exchange and everything, absolutely needed to be gone after. The little group between the New York Stock Exchange and the SEC, where it was, 20 specialists to get to whatever hell they named.
I don't care whether they needed to go after or not. The methods that he used were police state methods, and that's all that I cared about.
Okay, so
I don't want police state activity by a sitting governor or a sitting attorney general. Like I said, the most dangerous thing is a prosecutor, like an attorney general, with a badly written statute, and that guy was a real problem in that regard.
Okay, but I don't disagree with that. What I'm saying is, to go after a regulated industry that has gotten so in bed with the regulators I don't know how you do that as a law enforcement person. How in the state of Illinois would you ever go after Commonwealth Edison when they got their nose up the ass of the regulators? How do you fly in from the top and say you're both doing a bad job or something? I don't even know. It's part of this what I'm talking about.
Well, regardless, Spitzer gets Spitzer. They catch Spitzer by the fact that he's making these large cash withdrawals. That alerts somebody who says maybe the guy's being blackmailed. They then wiretap him to make sure he's not being blackmailed, and they catch him. They catch him involved with transporting a prostitute.
Okay. You're going a different direction. My point is, you asked why don't people be outraged. Well, in our industry, he's not very popular. Okay, whatever. He's because there's the same reasons you don't like him. People in my industry don't like him. So I'm sitting up at the Buckingham, and there's five traders at the thing, and they're pretty much happy he got whatever. And I said, by the way, guys, you guys are big swinging bleeps. Well, yeah. I said, what if, for instance, you got a big house. One guy's name was Joe. Joe, you got a big house, right? I'm going to guess that if a painter came by and said he wanted to pay $8,000 for your house, but he wanted it cash, you'd go pay him $8,000. Well, yeah. And you wouldn't hesitate to buy like an old classic car for $7,000 and pay that guy cash. Well, yeah. And of course, if you go to Vegas, you're a big swinging whatever. You're going to take that $9,000, $9,500. Well, yeah. I said, well, what if somebody looked at that and decided to wiretap your phones?
Yeah.
Why the hell would they do that?
I mean, that's a distinct possibility.
So why would somebody do that? That's what they did to Spitzer, and you're cheering it. Yeah, but he's a bleep. Well, who cares if he's a bleep or not? He has the same rights you and I are supposed to have.
That's patriotic stuff. Yeah. That's like I said, as I've said this third time, the most dangerous thing in any kind of government is a prosecutor with a badly written statute or a statute that gives wide discretion like that.
All right, I'm shutting up. What are we talking about?
I wanted to just raise something that drove me crazy, and I don't know if you guys have talked about it, but that's the Scholastic Aptitude Test situation. Are you familiar with this?
I've been kind of following, but not the latest little blurb. What's the latest?
SAT has decided, the college testing board, or the college board that does the SATs, has decided that in addition to your test score, that the actual score that you make when you take the test of math and English and writing, in addition to that, they are going to publish what they are referring to as an adversity score. The adversity score is going to be an adjustment to your test score based on some undefined terms that the College Board is going to use to try to equalize the test scores so that people who would be subject to adversity are going to benefit.
You gotta be kidding
me. On their test scores.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not. It gets better. Those factors are known to the College Board. They will not be known to anybody else. The score, that your adversity score, will not be reported to you taking the test. It will be reported to every college that you apply to.
How do they get the adversity score? That's gotta be question number one.
Well, you have a good question there. I don't know. Well, I don't know what they're adjusting for. Are they adjusting for economic circumstances? Are they adjusting for gender circumstances? Are they adjusting for it is the most ridiculous. Well, what it is?
Well, there's a lot of things on the most ridiculous column. Hold that thought. Now you've got me with eight questions here. We'll talk about it right after break. SP Futures down 25 now. NASDAQ Futures down 86. So it's not looking good. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Jay-Z on the board. He's Mr. Lou Michaels. SP Futures down 25. NASDAQ Futures down 88. Lou, I'm seething here during break. Now, let me get this straight. Jay-Z, it could be Jessica Zalewski, it could be Jessica Vernandez, Jessica Jones, whatever it is. As we say in the South Side, she lives at 33rd in the tracks. So I see the address, 3301 tracks. And she went to Hard Knocks High School, and all of a sudden she's got a 32 on her ACT, or what is ACT?
And, well, the scoring on the SAT is I think up to 2400.
Right. Okay,
so
let's say she scores
1780 on her SAT.
Right. So I'm going to look at this, and my job is to say, "Holy bleep, Batman! Whoever this girl is, she's pretty special. If she came out of that neighborhood in that high school and she got whatever this score is, I should notice the difference, and I should maybe want to interview her and say." Wow, your parents got you reading at age 3? It shows, you know, type of thing. Whatever. And, you know, she's read a million books without pictures and whatever. It doesn't matter what color she is. I mean, why do I want some nameless, faceless place making that adjustment for me?
It is quite likely that the adjustments are going to be based on race and perhaps sexual orientation. And that's pretty much it.
Are you going to get both scores? Is, I guess, the first question that popped into my mind.
I'm sorry, are you going to get
the adjusted and unadjusted score?
No.
The person who takes
the test is not going to see any of this.
No. I mean, I'm saying, is the school going to get Jessica scored a 35, adjusted 37? Am I going to get school scores?
Presumably, yes.
Okay.
But we don't know for sure.
That'd be outrageous. It's useless.
That they were going to do this adversity score and adjust the SAT score accordingly with this adversity score.
Right, so how big is the piece of paper that Jessica has to fill out to where she scores herself adversity-wise, and why aren't people going to coach you on what to put there to get the score adjusted?
I don't know, and I think as you well know, the situation is rife with potential for abuse and everything else. But I suspect what they're going to do is they're going to ask for family income, they're going to ask for race, they're going to ask for identified gender, they're going to ask for you know, whether you fall into what is it, LGBTQXYZ category. They're going to ask those basic questions, and then throw, you know, look at your home address, and then throw some kind of, I mean, what I would consider to be some kind of prejudicial stereotype adversity check on this. They're not going to get that intrusive because they can't. But what they are going to do if they do this, and I don't see how they're going to get around this, is they're going to end up with a Title IX violation under the 1964 Civil Rights Act, because they're going to have disparate impact on Asians. They're going to have disparate impact on white test takers. Because all they're collecting is some very basic evidence. And the commentators on this have been pretty straightforward in criticizing it, saying this is a race makeup. You know, this is a way to deal with the fact that you have lower test scores that are typically identified with particular races, and therefore they're going to make an adjustment based on that. Somebody made the comment, and I thought this was pretty good. I think it was Heather McDonald in City Journal. She said, look, Harvard and schools like Harvard, these elite colleges, are discriminating on the basis of race right now with respect to Asians. And if you look at the evidence that's coming out of the Harvard discrimination lawsuit, it's quite clear what they're doing. What the College Board has done is going to these colleges and saying, you know what, you don't have to discriminate on the basis of race anymore because we're going to do it for you. And we're going to do it with this adversity adjustment.
Two things. First of all, I understand that where you're going with this, and I, by the way, I'm agreeing with you 100%, which you're not supposed to do on radio. But this is such the tip. Why is it legal for people in Illinois to take people from Asia because they pay more? Or to take people from Wisconsin because they pay more. In Wisconsin to take people from Illinois. The whole concept, this is overrun like a tidal wave by who's paying more. It has nothing to do anymore with how qualified, or maybe at Harvard it is, but these other places, it's all who pays more. My cousins, you'd love these guys. Well, guys and ladies. My mother's cousins are from Columbus. They all went to Ohio State. None of their kids get in Ohio State. They all get into Michigan because Michigan
charges the people in Ohio State more. I mean, what? That's more discrimination in your own state than anything else I've ever heard of.
Well, it you know, depending on how you adjust it, that I know that's part of one of the reasons why places like the University of Colorado recruit so heavily in Chicago is because they can charge those out of state tuitions. I was a player in that for a while with one of my kids, but. That at least is not being discriminatory on a protected factor. To actually,
it's worse for God's sake.
Into this is just a disaster as far as I'm concerned.
All right, so Lou, let me get this straight. As you know, maybe because of the nuns or my parents or some combination or big huge uncles, I'm about as straight as you could possibly get, to the point where it's almost detrimental to my health. But I'm going to tell you, I could easily. I'm just in my own mind now. My mother remarried. My dad died when I was four. My brother wasn't even a year. She remarried. We were never adopted. Okay, I could easily have put down on that thing. I was the son of a deceased policeman. I could have given my grandmother's address in Inglewood. Said I had to spend half the time with my grandmother because whatever was going on in the family, which wasn't true. But I didn't even have to put down a reason. I could have gamed that thing easily if I would have had to. Why can't everybody else?
Well, I think that's going to be that's why the people that are looking at this very closely have come to the conclusion that what they're going to be doing is making very broad strokes based on race, gender, and perhaps gender identity, and that this is going to create their major diversity score. They don't believe that we're going to be seeing an adjustment, for example, for economic class necessarily.
Well, but why would anybody decide to take that game on?
I agree.
When everybody else in the university is doing it.
My immediate reaction to the story was, well, that's the end of the SAT, because nobody in their right mind would submit to that and would say, yeah, I think this is a good idea. But if Harvard and Yale and Vanderbilt and, you know, Cal Berkeley and some of these other schools where the social justice mentality is prevailing, if they decide to say, hey, you got to have an SAT score, we're not letting you in, then you know, you're kind of stuck if that's where you want to go to school.
Lutis, somehow with the complexity of this, I mean, I know it was a real long time ago when I was accepted at Notre Dame, but I got, you know, what the scores were used, first of all, in my day, you were actually told by people, don't bother practicing for the test, it doesn't help. Yeah, which of course is so now. If that's all you do for 4 months is prepare for the test, and people steal questions from the old tests, and you take 400 of them before you go in there, guess what? It's going to help you out a lot, I think. But anyway, I went to a good Catholic high school. The people from Notre Dame had good luck with people from Marist before. I was in honors. I graduated in the top 10, but I could have been the top 50 or top 100. I took the test. I got, you know, good scores. They weren't the world's best, but they were pretty. Actually, ACT score was pretty good, but that's not what they used. And everything kind of confirmed each other, and they said, "Okay, you're in." I mean, it's the idea that somehow you have to be more than that. I mean,
Chief, this is we are wrapping ourselves around the axle of some kind of implicit bias mentality. And the short answer is the terrible answer is that the SAT test is a reasonably good predictor of success in college. If you do well on that test, you have a much better chance of succeeding at college and succeeding at an elite college than you do if you scored poorly. And it doesn't matter what, you know, whether you adjust for adversity score or anything else. The absolute scores has traditionally been a pretty good predictor. Nobody wants to hear that. So what you have are people coming in saying, well, the test is culturally biased. And you can't expect somebody who grew up in a black neighborhood in an impoverished part of Chicago or Detroit or somewhere else. You can't expect them to have the same cultural reference points that some white kid growing up in the suburbs or some Asian kid growing up in the suburbs had. The problem with that, of course, is that, you know, Asian kids coming out of impoverished environments actually do really well on the SAT, and they do really well.
Well, we only have 30 seconds.
And these racial lines, which are tied as much to culture, I think, as anything else, these racial lines have stayed pretty well, consistent over the last couple of generations as we've looked at the testing data.
We have we've got 10 seconds, but one final thing is that the IQ test was never designed to measure intelligence. It was designed to measure how well you're likely to do in the school system as it was currently designed. For that particular...
Well, it's a real good measure of life success, or it's a reasonably good measure of life success too. And if you look at the data on that, that's another little fascinating thing.
But I mean,
it
was never. I mean, I was one of the top people on the IQ tests in our high school. Okay, and I did well in schools as they were currently designed. God, put me in a drawing class, Lou. If I drew a stick man, it'd be a fatso. I mean, I have zero talent. In an awful lot of areas. So it has nothing to do with intelligence. It has nothing to do with me being able to, I mean, innate intelligence. It tested what it tested, and it did a pretty good job at it. I mean, I did well in all the schools, and so the other people that did were pretty high on that test. It never was designed to figure out whether I could invent a mechanical device that would change the world. It was never designed to see if I was Edison. That's not what it was for.
No, but whatever IQ testing is measuring, it has a very good correlation to overall life success and success in schools, success in jobs,
as currently done. But if you put me in a place where all they do is design websites for people, I wouldn't do very well.
You're not going to funnel yourself into a job that you don't do well at. Well, and again, just take a look at the data is pretty clear on this.
Okay, but I'm saying the idea that it was overall intelligence, it was never designed for that, is what I'm saying.
I'm not sure I agree with that, but in any event, the data on this stuff is pretty interesting, and the SATs tests fall into that category. But you're now gaming it.
Because
we don't like to wrestle with results.
Good stuff. We got to talk to Fari about why the market's down. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your Memorial Day, will you? We'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks, S&P Futures still down 24 points. We're not going anywhere. We're stuck right there. We'll be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim House, he's Jay Z on the board. SP Futures now down 26.25. NASDAQ Futures down 92. So not a good morning as we lead into the holiday week. I would have bet yesterday, if I could put my $2 down on the window, I would have said, slow down for the rest of the week, maybe up a little bit both days, and I would be wrong. Good thing I don't position myself like I think. What do you think, Fari? Good thing I don't position myself like I think.
Don't you get Hamzy Analytics proactive market timing letter?
Yes, we do. But I have everybody snuggled up with a bunch of puts, so this isn't actually bothering me all that much. I just would like once in a while, the night before, to say, I think it'll be up tomorrow. I'd like it to go my way once at least. I mean, God, I would never have thought this. I honestly thought when we got done with the Chinese thing last week and everybody got done yelling at each other and basically put the thing off for 2 weeks, that we would have somewhat of a quiet 2 weeks. And yet every day somebody's hurling an insult back and forth. They can't shut up. Today it's the Chinese saying trade talks can't continue unless U.S. addresses its wrong action. Now we got Pompeo on the air. This is the greatest for all the administrations. Now it's a China is now a security threat. Now does that mean we're going to bomb them, or what does that mean when somebody comes on national TV and says, do they have a submarine off our coast? What are they doing? I mean, these words people use without defining them, Fari, it's pissing me off.
But, I mean, listen. We need volatility to stay in business. You and I know that. Not the investors. They don't need that. But they need us to keep them on the right side of the volatility. And I love this. Are you kidding me?
I'd like to see more of it.
The way I've been saying it, I've been pounding the table, I'm doing it in my writings, in my interviews, and on Twitter and Facebook. I'm seeing a beginning of a October pattern.
I am too.
If you go back October. Now, it wasn't a big drop then. It took like three shocks to go really down.
Yep. I think it is still.
And I don't think we're going to drop anywhere big right now. But I expect some fireworks this summer. And market is going to be thin. I'm going to love it.
I'm with you.
December
you
was my best month in number of years.
I was telling people the other day, in all my years when I gave lectures, I always had a piece, the last slide or two I'd put up had to do with, you know, just setting yourself up for long premium during the week. Because I never really wanted anybody, and I would never for anybody I traded for.
Right.
I mean, obviously, I'd buy calls or puts, or but I would never just, buy a future at 8 o'clock at night and just go to bed and sleep sound.
Oh, I can't do that. No. If I put a push on, I have to be. Yeah. I've been trading. First of all, now I'm coming into work at 4 a.m. Eastern time. So I've been trading from like 4 to 10-ish, to the best I can, a little bit better each day, because I'm carrying a little of a sore throat, and so I've shifted my hours. Also, I went to a pH balanced diet, lost a lot of weight. And
but
no coffee, no
sore
meat.
Throat.
I feel great.
Here's the thing.
I've been here today. I've been here from like 4:30, with no coffee. I don't feel it. And also, I'm not hungry.
Look
it up. Go to Google. pH balanced diet.
Remember one thing: everything in moderation, including moderation.
Oh yes, absolutely. But the problem is that did anything I wanted. You know, you know me. You know, when you're in control of your life, you do anything you want. You set the pace. You think, well, I was doing a lot of wrong things. It doesn't mean I was doing the right things. And it takes some reflection. And when I got my psoriasis and didn't go away, that was a warning. And talking to a few people and a special fitness trainer down here, by the way, she's very cute. It turned out that the skin was giving me a signal I have to take care of, and probably my pH is wrong, and so I started digging into that, reading and studying it, and then make a change, make a decision. It needs a lot of discipline. You got to hold on to it. You can't do everything you want. It's, you know, breaks one of those rules. I can't do everything I want. I get some discipline, but I see the result. I'm happy, and I've never been this sharp before. So, I've only done it 2 weeks now, so it's going to take a while, but. I think I'm going to be ready. It's going to be an interesting 3 to 6 months forward.
I would agree.
Now, I sent you some stuff overnight. If you look at what happened on this week has been a tough week for Grampino and both on the court side and also Congress side. And then the rhetoric is increasing with China, North Korea, Iran because of diversion they need. And those actually create more of a spiral effect on the market. So, I think volatility will go up, and if you love volatility, you know how to manage it. There are great riches out there.
All right, so far as a few things we've been talking about the week, and I was actually pretty happy to have you on today because I have some specific questions. I used to teach that if you wanted to be able to be traders of you know, S&P futures during the night or off hours, you need to protect yourself. And I would say, you know, you got to buy a straddle, basically. Okay, so, and then there's a certain amount you can buy and sell, and it'll always be covered. But I never recommended that to anybody because I really felt that most of the time you can't scalp enough to cover the time decay. But I'm going to say, I'm really surprised. And there was I mentioned this lady a couple times, and I should have went back and got her name. Of course, I didn't. She's on CNBC last Friday, and she says, you know, I've been with the market a long time. Now she's not near as old as me, but she goes, I've never, to me, this thing, the market, it looks to me like it's very, very mispriced. She goes, we're totally.
Upward or downward?
In terms of risk. She goes, we're totally discounting. We, if you talk to anybody in Wall Street, she's from New York, she goes, everybody will tell you, this thing with China, we're going to kick each other's ass for a month or two, and everything will be fine, and the surprise is going to be to the upside. It's like the 20 years of long-term capital didn't really cause a problem. You know, the Gulf War didn't cause a long-term problem. I mean, nothing caused a long-term problem, and that's people's mentality now. She goes, the idea that all this stuff is going on and the VIX is under 15, she says to me, is unconscionable.
I agree.
I mean, I've got
you know what? I can't rule that out, that we can possibly settle with China quickly, but I put that in a very low odds. As I told Mary Thompson one day at CNBC, because I was hitting it so hard, she started asking about future. I said, listen, I don't make the news. You guys report the news. I can just tell you what should be out there, X number, very small number of delta T forward. You know, because as you know, your corner probability drops in accuracy fast as you move out too far out as a function, as a multiple of time interval you're looking at. You know, if you're on a weekly chart, you can predict the next week really good. And maybe a week after that, but after that it dies. So it's hard to predict forward. So my point to them is, I don't know if we can solve the problem with China that fast. If you listen to Politburo, which is run by a bunch of engineers, by the way, they say, okay, Grampino has some issues, yes, okay. But remember, this took us 20 years to get here. So they're already hedging, saying, this is not going to get resolved immediately. We have some issues, we'll work on them, but it's not going to be immediate. That's one.
Well,
we can adjust then.
Yeah, but you have
to use a certain... You can't predict the news. You can't say, I'm going to go long because I think we're going to work this out 2 weeks from now. In the meantime, we're dropping like a rock.
But we're telling every...
So you got to flow with... you got to follow the money and flow with the ebb and flow of the market has.
Well, I've had, as you can imagine, all kinds of people calling me because I am pretty good at putting protective positions on for people. And you know what, everybody senses it, they're worried about it, and they go back to their other money manager and they say, don't worry, this is all okay, which is really what they want to hear anyway.
Yes.
And here it is, a couple, but I look
we're not ready to hear bad news.
No, we're, in the, Because every other time we've come right back, even last quarter or last year. But I can't believe that I've got a big position in the XLE, which is the oil piece of the. Sorry, I didn't sell any calls, which I'm very pissed at myself about. Yeah. Why should I sell calls in the XLE at a 16?
Why didn't you buy some puts?
Well, I got the puts. Don't worry about that. I always got the puts. But I'm saying, well, I don't.
So you have long puts and short calls.
No, I didn't sell.
You're like double pregnant.
Well, no, but I didn't sell them because. With tensions in the Middle East, why would I ever sell a call at a 16 volatility?
Yeah. You're going to be handed to you in 24 hours.
Yeah, but I'm going to be, yeah. I mean, I'm going to sell this thing for 30 cents, and all of a sudden they go after an aircraft carrier over there, and I'm buying it back at $5. I mean, you know, I don't want to do that. I mean, that volatility should be 22, and it's 16.
Well, first of all, on the short-term basis, these moves are so heightened, okay? I prefer 100 delta. I wouldn't touch options.
Yeah.
I stay with futures, and the moment I walk away from the screen, I close it. I do not keep any positions. Remember the movie Heat? Remember Robert De Niro?
Yep.
Movie Heat? Okay. He says that to the to that girlfriend of his that he was trying to convince to go live with him in Australia. He says, you have to be ready to move out of your any positions you have in 30 seconds or less.
Well, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the... Unfortunately, I don't make the markets. I see this is pointing. If you didn't have that process in your head, you would have been absolutely trunched, run over in them. Or a little bit of October, maybe you actually did a little bit better in November, still pounded, but in December, you have been guillotined. And then court-martialed later.
Well, whenever people bring a portfolio to me, and especially if it's a good-sized portfolio, for inevitably, if you're at one of the other firms... It'll be 12 pages long. You'll have 400.
There's no way to hedge that easily.
Yeah, that's exactly
you know?
Right. Well, that's my point.
I mean, everything is selling. There's no, but there's a buyer strike. Okay. Remember, we're very high in the market.
Yeah.
We're almost on a double top. When there's a buyer strike, the only solution out is cash. Go to cash. Forget the tax issue. Because if we fall here, have you looked at the long term charts? If we fall here, we could erase. All the gains since the election of not 18,
sure.
16.
That's what I'm saying.
This move is not going to be small if it comes.
But I'm trying to agree with you. I get this portfolio in the 400,000 with Big Cap Bob. There's 50 stocks there, Fry. There's 420.
Wow. You're killing me.
And then there's another one with Mid Cap Mike.
I hope you're charging him enough.
No, I'm saying, I said, I don't want that portfolio. You tell those people to get rid of all that crap.
Yeah.
I said, if I do a portfolio for you, it's going to be the Protected Index program. I'm going to have 1,000 shares of Russell, 1,000 shares of QQQ, and 500 shares of Spider.
You're already diversified.
Yeah, I said you're already diversified. Yeah. And guess
what? You're in the best horses. Remember, the beauty of cap-weighted indices is that they're I don't know how often S&P does that, but on the Qs, they rebalance every night. You have the top ranking, the top 100 stocks every day. Boom. And
well,
Qs.
Plus, I said...
Okay. So when I trade in Qs, I can't get more than diversified. I mean, 100 names... They're recapitalized every night, recalculated every night, recast, I should say, every night on the Qs, reflects on the NQ, and you trade it. And then you got a 30-to-1 leverage. You put up 3%, they loan you 97. You got to be fast, you got to make some mistakes, don't worry. But, you know, and then things were tough, for example, some parts of, let's say, April, a little bit, last year, things were tough, was... September and August.
The simplicity of it is, you'll have these puts, you'll have these calls, and you'll have this stuff. What if I'm bearish? I'll buy you two extra puts. It's that simple. I mean,
your delta is 50.
Yeah. Well, not exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the efficiency. Listen. I don't need to argue with you. There's plenty of published data. There's nothing more efficient than index futures.
Right.
That's why the big boys trade that.
No, but what you're saying about
and it's so diversified.
Okay, but be careful on the delta piece, because on the puts, if there's a problem when we head south,
the delta of a future is a 100.
I understand.
So the delta of a put can go over 100.
The 50 delta put, if with
no, can any position, any strike on the put become 100?
Yeah.
No, that could only be. Then you have the same leverage. Your synthetic stock
Well, yeah, if it gets into money enough, it's 100.
Stock then, right?
Well, no, what I'm
if
saying...
Gets, if he ever theoretically gets to 100 on Delta, right?
Okay, but listen...
So you'd be short stock, so you want to still do the index.
Listen me
for a second. Better leverage?
The reason why we were money...
Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay, listen for a second. In 2007, when the market was, you know, pretty much at a top, I put people money to work at that level, and the puts were so cheap, even though we were at, well, obviously nobody knew it at the top at the time, I actually bought a couple extra puts.
Right.
But if you totaled the delta up like you're talking about, because I was buying the puts at a 13 vol or something, implied volatility. Yeah. Well, when we started to go down, the puts, even though the quote delta at a 13 was not 100, all right, because the implied volatility went to 30, we actually made money on the position. I had a couple extra, okay, so that skews it a little bit. But the explosion in the puts, they almost acted like they were 80 or 90 delta.
I understand that, but theoretically, can never be over 100.
No, I understand that. I mean, we're 1 to 1,
that's
it.
Here, it's always 100. You know this is 100. And you have no theta. You have no theta. Hello, Murray. You have no theta.
I get
that's why the big boys, the whales, they trade this.
Yeah, well,
I'm not saying all your accounts could be whales. I understand that.
Well, okay? I would love to have...
regional brokers from. I understand that. But I'm just saying, you got to realize the sharp edge of that knife is played by the most sophisticated people, and it's the ESNNQ.
Far from your lips to God's ear. Give me an account that's CalPERS with $40 billion, and I'll be happy to hedge with S&P big guys. I know.
Well, I understand.
I'd love to be able to do that.
Listen, one of the biggest players in the index game is Wells Fargo.
Yeah. Well,
huge. I mean, huge. And I don't know who is their clients. Could be CalPERS could be one of them, because they're both in San Francisco. But one of the biggest players in the index futures is Wells Fargo. I mean, to massive tune every day, just ridiculously high.
Well,
I mean,
the reason why, and this is not a shameless plug, but Fari actually does know once in a while what he says. Because what happens in an index is not going to go to zero, Fari. I mean,
exactly. Because, low averages.
Because
exactly.
Guess what? If all these firms start falling out, PTI Securities and Fari Inc. will be in the upside. They'll find somebody to put in there. It's not going to zero. Or like a stock could actually go to zero. Hey, real quick.
Well, the only stock that I know went to zero was Donald J. Trump's, DJT.
How about
White Knight showed up.
How about in the Chicago area?
Now, usually when it drops, you know, somebody comes in as a White Knight, even in bankruptcy, but it is. Fari, went to zero.
If you were in the Chicago area, which I think maybe you were at the time, say 2002, and somebody...
I was visiting back then, yes.
Somebody walks into your office and make believe you're a broker-dealer. Oh, God. Make believe you're a broker-dealer like I am, and somebody drops a portfolio in front of you, and it's got United Airlines, it's got Sears, it's got Kmart, it's got Bear Stearns, it's got... where else we got? General Motors. And we could throw a couple more in there. Citigroup, which had to give a reverse split. And you'd probably look...
Bank of America.
Yeah, I would have looked at that and said... Looks fine to me. Wow. I'm glad that never happened, because every one of them are worthless.
Option Expo, okay? I think you guys, somebody of you guys were there,
I think Dan was there.
On the SIBO panel, you know, the Jim Bittman. Jim Bittman asked me, and he says, okay, Mr. Hamzy, it's your turn. What is your stock, buy or sell, your best pick? And I put up my screen, my computer. It was displayed on the biggest screen. I went through my put calls and I said B of A. And B of A was trading like 57 or 58, something like that. He had just made an all-time high. Or maybe it was 61, something like that range. I'm not precise, but that area. Because this was right at the end of October of 2007. Market high was, I believe, October 11th. Okay, so it was somewhere up there. And I said, the best. And they said, oh, you buying it here? I said, no, it's a short. I said, I don't like Ken Lewis. I think he made a mistake with Countrywide. Little I knew he was going to make a second mistake and buy Merrill Lynch. One guy walked out on the very back. The room was packed. This is a SIBO event, right? You know how those go.
Yep.
500, 700 people in. One guy stood up, yelled at me, and said, this is unconscionable of somebody with your stature to say something like this, and walked out. A year later, I hear from him. A year later, right? This is now December. A little bit more than a year. It was December of 2008. The stock is trading at 5, I think, or 3.
Yeah, it got down to like 3 or something.
Yeah. I mean, just like, and I asked him, and he called, he said, I want to subscribe. I said, what was the problem? You never said anything about that. He says, all my money, I'm an employee, I mean a retired employee,
yeah.
All my money was via Vestock. And what you said really shook me up, and I thought was unconscionable. I called to apologize. So I gave him some free time on the system. But I felt south for him. He says, now I got to go to work. My retirement is gone.
Well, Ferry, I went to one of the Economic Club of Chicago
dinners. So you did your comment? Yes. Yeah. You know, you could see, look at things perfect, but, you know, four weeks, things could start changing.
Whenever anybody
asks. And then, of
course,
once we hit Bear Stearns, it was a different ballgame. I just moved to Chicago, by the way. I just moved to Chicago, but my first trades were shorting S&P because of Bear Stearns when your buddy and mine, Jimmy Kramer, came on and said, he says, these are my friends, they're good people.
Yeah.
Don't sell this stock, go and buy it some more. We doubled down that day. I think it was either Wednesday, Thursday morning or Friday morning that was. We doubled down. By Monday, it was a different story. And it was I think McClellan Oscillator hit 390 negative, and we launched. That was a buy signal. They just have to flush out Bear Stearns.
Well, by
market timing
which,
works. You have to pay attention to it.
Well,
look at our ranking on Time and Digest.
You also have
8 years in a row, number one.
The key thing, Farhi, is if the market falls apart.
Yes.
The key thing.
We're going to make a lot. I'm going to make a lot of money.
The key thing is you got to have money left. That's
what I'm saying.
Yeah, you got to have money left.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's why you have to be short.
Or
it can't
least,
be long here.
Or at least
you will be long between Christmas and New Year. I'm not saying right at the Christmas Eve, that would be optimal, but nobody catches the bottoms.
Right.
But somewhere there were many, many signals that said, buy, 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 cover your shorts, buy. First she said, cover your shorts, then says, buy, neutral, buy. You're going to go through that process. Right now, we were buy, 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 buy all the way into May. Now, early part of May said, start selling, get flat, get neutral. Now it's beginning to say, start getting short. You know, you don't go from go long, go short. It's a good gradual move. Bottoms are V-bottoms. I know that's a little bit faster.
I think
tops take longer to form. But that's history. If you look at charts, it's history. History repeats itself. The tops take longer to form. You're going to have a couple of false tops, but eventually it catches up. Right now we are below 50 bar. We can't punch through. As I wrote last weekend, I said, guys, 50 bar is crucial. Take a look at it. Look where we are right now. Tonight we're going to have a webinar. It's going to be busy. We're going to go over these charts. But I think we're getting set up to be, we're early part of December, October we're in. Remember, we still rallied up into early November, and then there was another false top on December, and then we sold.
Well, Farhi, we're depending.
I'm not saying it's going to be tomorrow, but I would have a buy. Get out of your winners and be light, be nimble.
Well, you've got to, again, this particular, and I don't trade this way for my clients because people want to be in stocks, they want to be protected, and that's what I do for them.
Well, I understand. But, that's a different application.
But I'm saying that if my signal the last few weeks, not the last couple of weeks when all the stuff with China really started, was that the same signal I got last year was that the market started to get...
What time last year?
In August.
Okay.
Was that the market, and this has happened in 2000, it was different stocks. When the move up in the market gets narrower and narrower, that's when I always take notice. And this rally this year was really the big comeback again of Amazon, of all those things. Those stocks, they had lost their kind of dominance the last quarter of last year, and they sort of reasserted themselves. I'm going to say, where are we in May? In like late March, early April, and that's what my clue that I better get my puts snug here. I don't like that because I'm looking at two stocks that are sort of American bellwethers. UPS is now solidly under $100.
Yeah.
It's down 25%.
Look, if you go back on McClellan Oscillator or Breadth Trust, past early March, I'd say like March 8th on, we start having tops without any momentum. When you're making new highs, but there's no momentum play. Okay? That means what? You're running out of gas.
Well,
you're on fumes.
And I don't want to...
There's going to get a good number of those false readings, and then it drops. When other people start understanding that. But if you look at about March 8th on, we were completely on fumes, momentum-wise, okay? Not price-wise, okay? And that's what you're saying happens. The big managers, they move to the top names. Everything is trading is Amazon, Microsoft, Apple. You know?
That's how much Apple is.
How many stocks can you get go down high?
We only got 30 seconds. What do you make of the 35% drop in 3M here? To me, that's staggering.
3M? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Okay, it was 220. Now it's one season. They had bad earnings, and they've gone down like every day since then. The thing is from...
Let me bring a chart up. You're way ahead of me.
I got one.
Wow.
It traded 220.
Look at this. Yeah, look at the monthly. The monthly chart says like...
April 24th is 220. Now
I may want to bounce here, but if I don't, you know, you're going to see me in the hundreds.
Yeah, but it looks terrible.
I mean, 100 area. 110, that area.
It look at your UPS, same way. Looks almost the same. And some of these, I mean, these are, you know, bellwethers.
Well, I don't know. UPS could be a little bit different than 3M. UPS is more of a, you know, Amazon is coming out of space.
Okay.
And UPS gets a lot of business from Amazon. And listen, now we have Amazon.
All right, Furrier. You have a nice weekend, buddy. SP futures down 27. NASDAQ futures down 92. This is the lowest we've seen in the S&Ps. So it doesn't look good. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. David Animal and his sexy Jay-Z doing a good job on the board. SP Futures on 26.75, 27, right about there. We've been here now for the last half hour or so. Doesn't seem like we're getting any better. NASDAQ Futures down 91, Dow Futures down 239. Every single stock pre-market in the Dow Industrials is down. Most notable, Boeing down 778. Apple down $3. And, those are kind of the biggest movers. We got, United Health down 2. Every stock that's open in the transportation average is also down. So, I see one on my screen, ARRY. I don't know what that is. It's up a penny. Other than that, not so hot. Again, over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 190. That's 1.6%. If we puts you down 91.2. Kakaran down 84.6. So generally across the board there. Asia not as bad. Nikkei down 132.6%. Shanghai down 39.4%. Under 2,900 again, 2,852. Hang Seng down 438. That's 1.6%. 27,276. We've got oil taking it on the chin as well, down $1.32. $60.10, which is, it's a worst week in 6 months. We had big build in crude stockpiles, so evidently that's trumping the tensions in the Middle East. Brent down $1.53. Natural gas up 2 cents, $2.56. That's still low. But where David said last time he was on to buy it, if you'd have bought it there, it's right about the same spot. RBOB 195 sits at down 10 cents in almost a week. We've got gold now up 580, 1280. Gold's rallying in the face of this, but it's got a long way to rally. It's been down so much. Silver up 6 cents. Jay-Z, what do you got? Some better news than what I have.
Absolutely. Morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Chicago weather today, pretty sunny, little clouds, but we have a high of 75, low of 52. Phoenix is cloudy with a high of 78, low of 54. In baseball, the Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 5-2, Cubs beat the Phillies 8-4, and the White Sox beat the Astros 9-4. In traffic, there is still that I-90 West ramp is closed at 47th Street due to a jackknifed semi. Nothing else. Back to you.
So is that cloudy a little bit of the time, or the actual clouds themselves are little?
The actual clouds themselves are little.
All right. Well, that's they big enough to block the sun, or not really?
Definitely not.
You're a partly sunny kind of girl. I love that about you, Jay-Z. David, how are you? What's going on this morning? I would never have guessed this last night. I thought we were going to wheeze into the rest of the holiday week, maybe a little bit to the upside and a snoozer. It's not a snoozer.
It's, still trade tensions. Panasonic, that does a lot of battery work and some chips, you know, became the latest to say that they're likely to not ship to Huawei, and Arms Holdings in Europe saying that they're not going to do business for the foreseeable future with Huawei, so now it's become intensified. Huawei responded by saying, you know, they should have their own operating system and maybe some their own chips by the end of the year. So it just gets to be, you know, tit-for-tat type of situation. And the PMI figures from Europe, especially Germany, were really disappointing. So, you know, I mean, Asia was down a little bit in general, other than Vietnam and a few others, but the rest were down, but not significantly. But Europe was trash this morning.
What, in the midst of this insult carrot and stick thing we got going with China, I think, let's put it this way, Trump and the Trump supporters, and I don't know who's first or who's second here, thinks that we're leading the pack in the insults, who's hurting who type of thing. You know, it looks to me this morning, and they didn't exactly say this, although here's the headline, I'll read exactly what it is, so I'm not editorializing. China says trade talks can't continue unless U.S. addresses its wrong actions. I was just thinking of the article a week ago from Morgan Stanley, and you know what, David, you read this stuff, the name Morgan Stanley is supposed to mean something, but I don't know how rigorous. Do they have five of their best men or women on the job for this study, or they put some schlump on there? I don't know. They came to the conclusion that if you would have thought in the beginning, and again, I'm not going to go through the whole routine about how tariffs hurt or help the various countries. I mean, in theory, you don't want to put a tariff on something that you only can get in one place, because all it does is raise the price to your people, and those the people on the other end, you still got to buy it from them to the extent that you need to buy it. So that's, you know. The other thing is, it's a competitive market, and you put the tariffs, say, on the Chinese, and the only way for them to compete is to eat the whole thing, which obviously would be your intention if you're the White House. And evidently, Morgan Stanley did a study by some of their people. Again, how big was the study? How good were the people? God only knows. But their conclusion was that the Chinese were not eating anywhere near as much of the tariff increases as we, somebody here on this end, whether who the we is, again, I don't know, initially figured, which is exactly what you don't want to have happen. And I saw.
Well, we know that. I mean, Trump can say all he wants that, you know, China's pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into the U.S. Treasury, but we know that's not happening. That isn't mechanically how it works.
No.
It's the importers, and you know, not just Jim Cramer saying, you know, hey, Trump's living a mirage, and it's the U.S. consumers, and to the extent that the retailers or importers can pass it on, it's the people that pay. But beyond him, I mean, Mnuchin was saying, you know, yesterday, I talked to Walmart to see how much they can absorb and how much they'll be able to pass along to customers or whatever. So in his own administration, it's obvious that China, if they're paying anything via, first of all, they're probably not paying anything. They're probably not writing checks. If they're absorbing part of it, it might be in discounts.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I've read many estimates, and they say it's a quarter or less.
Well, let me make a simple example. Sometimes for everybody, not just listeners, you want to drop it down to the bottom line. Let's pick one product, David, that I know about. These dudes that have been in the auto glass business forever, when he breaks your windshield, they'll come to your house, put it in for you. And they've been doing this, you know, I'm thinking the kid's grandfather, the guy's my age.
Safe Light?
No, the guy's on the south side. Eminem.
Okay.
They're terrific dudes. I played ball with them for 40 years, and I think the kid's grandfather started it. And when I say kid, he's 60-something. Some percentage of the glass comes from China. Let's make it easy for the listeners. Let's say half. So we drop a 10% tariff on the Chinese glass coming in. Now, if the people here were PTI Auto Glass, we can say, well, looks like the Chinese glass is 10% higher. We can screw those dudes and leave ours the absolute same price. We refuse. Say there's three manufacturers here. There's Jessica's, there's yours, and there's mine. The three people on this end, without price fixing, we could all get a hair up our behind of patriotism and say the president's doing this for a reason. We're not going to raise our prices at all. So now the Chinese sit there and say, hey, wait a minute, we don't have any sales. Well, that's because their window is $100 and ours is $110. They're going to say, well, we want to be in the window market. We make 15. Let's drop ours $10 and we'll suck it up. We'll only do
right,
five.
That's what I said, discounts.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying, I'm working my way through, you know, the whole. Now, in the case here, our guys on day one, the David Chief and Jessica, three firms said, we're all $110. This is great. So now they're not eating anything, and guess what? You're paying 10 more for your winch. So a lot of it has to do with the reaction on our end. And I don't see President whatever trying to jam our guys to say, what are you doing raising the prices because of it? I think our guys are. At least the one area I love. I mean,
I agree 100%.
And that's what Morgan Stanley, I mean, I think their survey is bigger than my one industry survey. But I'm thinking our guys are saying this is great. And raising their
and then who knows let's say it's $5 because you know you said 50% of the glass, so 50%
yeah, I don't know if it's 10%
of that is $5, so it's $105. Maybe to make sure the margin is there, they raise it to $110, $112.
Yeah. So I'm saying they're not. I don't think they're eating near as much as we might have thought they're going to eat because our guys were happy as hell to raise the prices.
They're not.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bet the steel's all up. Our guys didn't say, no, we'll hold price.
No question. Nucor has said that.
Yeah. Well, but now last week we
I have a different question, and I alluded to it, you know, last week and Monday, but I wonder how much, I mean, as this sourcing supply chain, you know, continues to move, whether it's Singapore, Thailand, you know, Vietnam has become a favorite. And if you watch, I watch the indexes every day, and it's amazing, especially in this last 3-4 weeks, that while Hang Seng and Shanghai Composite have been down, virtually with just a few dead cat bounces, the VNX for Vietnam has been not every day up, but mostly up. So it's obvious, if it's not actually happening, the market's anticipating that a lot of this supply chain and sourcing goes to Vietnam. My question is, since China, you know, helped support Vietnam in the war so much, whether you like the North Vietnam or South Vietnam, or I'm not making a political statement, but basically the concept was when we pulled out that China, quote-unquote, owned Vietnam. Now if everybody or 40% of the commerce that was originally sourced in China now moves to Vietnam, can China throttle that? How much control did they have over Vietnam?
Well, make the question easier. I mean, you ever been to San... It was a song. You ever been to San Francisco?
Yes.
Back when I... when I was my first trip as an executive, mini executive, was to San Francisco in like 1975, right? Everybody you met, David, was an import exporter. If you had an office half the size of PTI's, you're in the import export business. What makes? I don't know. I'd love to have somebody. You might know somebody, or your brilliant children's maybe know somebody in the import export business. How hard is it for a shipment of Chinese wine glasses to just run through an import exporter in Saigon and come here? I
don't know the answer to that.
I bet it's
it's coming from Vietnam. Not really, but we'll say it is.
Yeah, I mean, just run it through there. How rigorous are the people on the ports? Okay, tariffs with China are 10%. Tariffs with Vietnam are 1%. Looks to me like this one's from Vietnam, 1%. What's the discipline on that? I have no idea.
I would really like to know, because, like I said, the divergence between the Shanghai Composite and the VNX over the last 3 weeks has been monster.
Yeah, I'm not so sure you couldn't change all those bills of lading while the thing was at sea. or we'll drive by the Vietnam coast. I mean, I don't know how hard it is. Actually have to unload it in Vietnam, load it back up?
The Target, which obviously has escaped a lot of this stuff, and they said that they've outsourced so much. I mean, and they sell a ton of cheap apparel. Do they literally go to Vietnam or Thailand or where, Singapore, where all these places where they say they've moved their sourcing, and literally say, hey, these factories are in fact producing there and they don't really have anything to do with China, or not?
Well, yeah, the Target's up again today. But I mean, I don't know the rules. Does the captain have to wave to the shoreline when he goes by? Does he have to unload and unload? We're Americans. There's got to be people here that are making out like a bandit on this deal, because there's loopholes in whatever the hell the White House is doing on a weekly basis. I don't think we're set up to muscle this stuff. And to be perfectly blunt, I mean, I'm not gonna compare him to Obama or to Bush or to Clinton. I don't think any president really gives a rat's behind whether their buddies are scheming money on some deal like this. And I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. If Trump found out tomorrow that four of his best Republican friends somehow are in this business and making more money than the dreams of avarice, I don't think he comes down on them at all. Just like
I agree, and beyond that, a lot of pundits, Bannon and all these other folks, and Bolton and all these folks that are hardliners and whatever, and I'm not a real fan, and I would never vote for them should they run for public office, but they basically said, you know, the trade aspect is just, I don't know, I would maybe term it exemplary or just a part of it. I mean, in my opinion, you know, and I've said this before, you know, oh, that we have a $280-300 billion trade deficit. You know, I don't think that's really the issue. If I want to go to Dollar Tree and spend $2, you know, on two packs of, you know, bamboo fans from China, then whether it's smart or not, whether the fans are worth 10 cents or not, I'd rather give up the $2 and have those fans to keep me cool, you know, when it's hot. So the trade deficit is, you know, and I'm being facetious a little bit and you know, too simplistic, but, you know, it isn't the trade deficit. It's the intellectual property. It's the hacking. It's the forced, you know, partnerships. It's, you know, all the other stuff, and that's going to be very, very difficult to work out beyond the trade issues.
Well, the reason why, I mean, I know it sounds like I'm beating up on Americans, but I'm not. I'm saying you can't have, you can't learn how to swim and stay dry. You just can't do it in this world.
Right.
I could make other grosser analogies, but I won't. You can't have, I was reading about this rare earth stuff yesterday. The mountain with the something pass mine in California that was at Molybdenum was the name of the place. So anyway, the thing closed up because we're getting it all from China. And then all of a sudden China starts balking away. We better open this place back up again. Somebody pours a lot of money into it. Guess what? We sell it to the Chinese. Now, so I'm like, you can't write a picture. If we're on this is the part that, I mean, I was not a World War II, obviously I'm not that old, But my parents, my dad, I talked to until I was four, but however much you can talk when you're four. I mean, my uncles all fought. My mother worked in whatever the supply chain, whatever they call it, the quartermaster corps. My aunt did. I mean, it was, I the sense I get is so different. We're here, we have our pundits, whether it's Bush, we're at war, or it's a war on terror. Obama, the same thing. We're blasting people all over the damn place with drones and everything, and even though the guy got the Peace Prize, which I cringe when I hear. Now, this guy doesn't seem to care one way or the other whether we get involved, whether we don't. But we're on this constant, quote, war footing, David, allegedly. I mean, you know, and yet making money, stealing money from the government has become a national sport. In times of, quote, warfare, that's damn treasonous. I don't think you would have gotten. I'm not naive enough to think that the guy who made the PT engines in Buffalo, New York, where I think they were made, PT boat engines, probably didn't get 5% more than he was supposed to. But it wasn't 80% or 75%.
No, I agree.
But now we don't seem to care. Trump is bitching a blue streak at the Chinese, and yet if some of his buddies are making a gazillion dollars on the trade, that's okay. No, it's not. Not if we're on damn near a war footing with these guys, which you almost are, it seems to me. And oh, by the way, if the Chinese are so rotten, which I don't happen to like them very much, if they're so rotten, guess what? Tomorrow there should be a ban on any sale of any company in this country to the Chinese. And all of a sudden, one of his guys is going to be in there crying like a 2-year-old in the Oval Office. What do you mean these guys are going to buy $2 million for my building? My business is only worth $1 billion. Nobody hears that stupid, and they are. Oh no, go ahead, go sell it to them. Okay, don't sell it to them. Where are we here? We can't even make the rules for ourselves. We can't even tell Boeing, don't give these guys the tail, for God's sake. I mean, that's where it has to come from this end. You're not going to sign an agreement with these guys saying don't ask for it. I mean, how stupid is that, David?
No, I get it. And I mean, and that's the issue, and either have to say it's unable to be resolved because that's their way of life and they still have China 2025, and that's, they play for the long term, we're playing for the next election, they don't have to worry about the next election because they don't have any, or you have to say it's unresolvable. Or if it is, because you put, you know, 25% tariffs on everything they make or literally shut off the commerce, then it's going to take a while.
How about here's a list of 200 items that we care about, either because they're our inventions, we need them for war, we need them for something. You can't give it to them. And take the guy from Boeing and slap his ass in jail if he does. That we're never going to have that happen here, because that's where it has to come from.
Yeah, they're the biggest exporter that exists, and I don't know the percentage, but they get a huge chunk from, you know, Asia, primarily China.
Well, if it's, quote, a war that these guys keep talking about, from Bush to Obama to this guy, if it's the war on terror, the war on this, you didn't get to give Adolf Hitler the plans of our new Spitfire.
I was literally, yeah. Before you said that, I was thinking that same thing.
I mean, if it's a war, they're different.
Because you talked about World War II. Yeah. You know, we didn't send them, you know, we didn't sell them or trade them, you know, bomber technology when we were trying to annihilate them.
Yeah, we didn't have Hitler come over and buy the Ford plant that was producing the B-17s. I mean, first of all, they use the term war like it shouldn't be used. But if they're going to use it, use it. You know,
right.
No, you can't trade with you. I don't think we're at that stage yet. So don't keep pushing it like it is and then use people to make money at it. Oh, by the way, they want to buy Pebble Beach. Well, don't let them buy Pebble Beach. Well, that was the Japanese. But
right.
Still, I mean, what's it? I'm on a roll. Did the Germans bomb Pearl Harbor? Just don't let him go. He's on a roll. How many people remember that one from, was it Animal House? Belushi. The late, great Jim Belushi. Not Jim, John Belushi.
John Belushi.
So, okay, now are we going to sit here and snore at our desks for 8 hours where it's booze around 25 and then we make a 2-hour move in the clothes and figure out what tomorrow's like or what?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, today really, I mean, and just almost, and I don't mean in an economic standpoint, I'm talking about a market standpoint, the way, you know, FedEx and airlines and retailers and, you know, energy issues and mining issues and whatever have taken it on the chin, it almost seems like, you know, the money's trying to find any place to hide. And, I mean, and I own no utilities, but that's been the only place really to hide.
David, with this happening every day, why, even with the spike this morning, why is the VIX so low? Why is somebody like me who tried to sell calls in the XLE the other day looking at calls at a 16.5 implied volatility when we got tensions in the Middle East?
Why I don't get that either. And then full disclosure, I have some VXX, long call spreads. And not a lot, but a few. And that, so I don't get it either. I mean, I'm out to July, but I got to believe upside, downside, whatever, the VIX should go up. I mean, I got to believe in this kind of turmoil. I mean, one tweet over the weekend, oh, we're making progress, and she and I are having a summit, and, you know, we could rally 40 handles. So, I mean, I got to believe there's going to be volatility. I got to believe that there's an 18 or 20 handle, you know, even in the near term for the VIX.
Well, what
I may be wrong, but that's what I look
but,
at.
You know, I was talking to the other day. Was, you know, it's weird, David. I'm getting like the taste of two markets. That on the one hand, every day is like a Fed announcement, in a sense that the spoos are going to move 20 points based on a tweet out of one side or the other. But beyond that, it doesn't appear. I mean, the market's almost like getting used to that. We have a Fed announcement every day, but there's nobody has the inclination. We're 28:33 on the E-minis here. Nobody has the inclination that next week it's going to be 2,700 or 3,000. Like 20 seems to be the number. Now today we're down 23. And now somebody will say tomorrow, oh, we are going to talk, and we'll be up 23.
I mean, well, the last, this, from a technical basis, at 2,800, I mean, actually 2,799.75 was the cycle low a few weeks ago in the June E-mini S&Ps. And if that goes, you do have and again, in full disclosure, I have no shorts and no hedges other than a little bit of the VIX spreads. So I'm not, you know, talking a position, but you get below 27.99, and I mean, it really does look like 26.50.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, anything truth in what I mean? It looks like we've gotten used to the 20 point tweet or the 20
point. And it is a trading range. Let's say 2,800 holds, you could go right back to 29.50. It might be between 2,800 and 29.50 for some time to come. It's possible.
And the, you know, the idea that it's the 20-point move, like I said, it's right before the Fed announcement. Nobody wants to trade. Nobody wants to get away in one of these things until finally they reach their level. I mean, this morning we got here and we've been sitting for the entire show. We're in $2 on these spoos,
right?
Which you wouldn't expect with this kind of a move.
Right.
And yet, a real quick question. What do you make of the 3M thing? The thing's down like 35%. What in God's name? Now, UPS is way below in their number here.
Huge, huge percentage of their dealings there with Asia and Hong Kong. Huge.
Really? Caterpillar the same way?
No.
They don't
much
see
less than what one would think.
But John Deere took it.
If I was to do a pair spread, I would absolutely, even at these levels, buy Caterpillar and sell 3M.
Where do you put John Deere in? I don't trade much of that, but
I don't know. I don't know. It's a percentage. I think, I'm not positive about this, I think it's a higher percentage than Caterpillar, nowhere near as much as 3M.
Where, last question, and because I have, you know, a lot of people that, A, are threatening to be clients, and B, that are, that have this, I have no idea what to tell people on Apple, David. And I know I asked you this Monday, I have no idea what to tell people.
It's a guess. I mean, it really is a guess, and in full disclosure, I do have a few short puts, very few, but I think it has value here. I cannot believe that the Chinese will target them. I could see them targeting Starbucks, Nike, many others, 3M, Boeing, but not Apple because of the employment situation. I mean, you have to be covered. You either have to sell out of the money puts or do some call spreads or covers or something. But let's put it this way, I only own maybe 200 shares total for clients, not talking a position, very small, but I would buy it.
What do you think? I mean, we only got 15 seconds. Do you think there's a problem with the Chinese people getting pissed off at what's going on and just not buying Apple because it's U.S., or do you think not really?
I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe
the government's trying to hinder them, but I do not know that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more worried about that than the actual fighting back and forth. If all of a sudden, like, I'm probably more or less likely to buy a, if there was a Chinese car, I wouldn't buy it tonight.
No.
I mean, feel the same way. SP Futures down 24.50. NASDAQ Futures down 83. I'm Tom Howie. He's David Adelman. She's Jay-Z. Nice job, JD. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.